Thank you very much. Thank you, Professor Sobolescu and We Hero Center for having us all here. It's indeed a great privilege, and we hope for future cooperation. So when 1 month ago, my colleague, Professor Mureșan, asked me if I could contribute something to this workshop, I told him something that he already knew, which is that I am not an ethicist. I am a philosopher logician. But he assured me that I could do something which might be interesting for having a discussion here, which is what logicians are doing usually. They analyze things, structures, sentences, and so on and so forth. So this is how I understand my task for today. I'm going to do in a very short period of time an analysis of this issue, of this question. However, I'm not going to address the issue directly. I'm not going to offer, by the end of my presentation, a direct answer to the title topic, which is what does applied mean in applied ethics. Instead, I'm going to proceed through a substitute question, which is how do we reason in ethics? How do we pass moral judgments in ethics? And I believe that if we can clarify this issue, then we can move and we can approach to making a clear distinction between theoretic and applied ethics. So more specifically, I'm going to take for granted that part of the answer to the issue of the specificity of applied ethics is to figure out how we reason and how we make judgments in ethics in general. Of course, this substitution of one issue for the other is worth being examined, but here I'm going to state dogmatically that the latter question should be answered before addressing directly the former issue. Now my remarks will sort out certain connections between moral reasoning and moral judgment. In various contentious and hard cases which ask for our moral assessment, it is obvious that people tend to make very firm moral judgment. But when they are pressed to give a rationale for their judgment, in most cases, eventually many people say something like, "I don't know, I can't explain it, I just know it's wrong or it's good." So what we have here is an interesting and rather curious typical case of knowing that something is morally wrong or good without knowing why. Could we extract from this common attitude something having the epistemic value of a more general model? What model of moral judgment and or moral reasoning will allow a person to know that something is wrong or good without knowing why? Here we can make recourse to the history of moral psychology, a domain which is not very old. It is a fact that moral psychology has been dominated for a very long time by rationalist models of moral judgment. Rationalist models in philosophy in general and in ethics in particular emphasize, and I quote from a paper in the 1960s by Bernard Williams, the power of a priori reason to grasp substantial truth about the world, unquote. This general principle is reflected in the moral realm by instantiating the model to moral knowledge. So, rationalist approaches in moral psychology say that moral knowledge and moral judgment are reached primarily by a process of reasoning and reflection. This model does not preclude the intervention of moral emotions and feelings. They may sometimes be inputs to the reasoning process. Nevertheless, moral emotions are not the direct causes of moral judgments. In rationalist models, the order of explanation is this: first, reason about issues of, say, harm, rights, justice, and fairness, and then pass a judgment on the actions and behavior of the moral actors. Now, how this model works within a moral situation of the "I don't know, I can't explain it, I just know it's morally wrong or okay" type? This question invites us to think the whole moral situation in an alternative way, namely through an intuitionist model. Moral intuitionism refers to the view that there are moral truths, and that when people grasp those truths, They do so not necessarily and primarily through a process of ratiocination and reflection, but rather by a process akin to perception, in which one, to quote a philosopher working in this field, Harrison, just sees without argument that there and must be true. Intuitionism in moral psychology say that moral intuitions, including moral emotions, come first and they directly cause moral judgments. Thus, moral intuitionism is a brand of moral cognitivism, but it is not a kind of reasoning. To this, one may add a social dimension of an interpersonal process. How moral reasoning interferes with our morality? Moral reasoning is, in most cases, an ex post facto process used to influence the intuitions and thus the judgments of other people. Here's the story. According to this model, one feels a strong moral sentiment or feeling, such as a quick flash of revulsion at the thought of, say, incest. And one knows intuitively that something is wrong. Then, when faced with a social demand for a verbal justification, one becomes a lawyer trying to build a case rather than a judge searching for the truth. The history of Western philosophy documents very well this conflict that lies in the background of the picture that I sketched before. Thus, philosophers have very often written about the conflict between reason and emotion. Plato and the Stoics in antiquity thought that the drama of human moral life was the struggle of reason to control the emotions and the passions of the body by channeling the body's passions toward virtuous ends. For the Stoics, emotions are conceptual errors. Medieval Christian philosophers took the same dim view of the emotions, and in early modernity, the 17th century's continental rationalists, such as Leibniz, Descartes, and Spinoza, worshipped reason, hoping to model all of philosophy on the deductive reasoning method, which one can find in Euclid's The Elements. On the other hand, though, the English and Scottish philosophers of the 18th century, notably Hume and Smith, have challenged this received standard view and opened up the discussion of alternatives to rationalism. They argued that people have a built-in moral sense that produces feelings of approval toward benevolent acts and feelings of disapproval toward evil and vice. Hume is notorious for supporting an analogy between moral judgments and aesthetic judgments in such a way that moral judgments are derived from sentiment, not reason, and we obtain moral judgment by an, and I quote, immediate feeling and finer internal sense, not by a chain of argument and induction, end of quote. The most striking of his views in this regard is this, and I quote again, we speak not strictly and philosophically when we talk of the combat of passion and of reason. Reason is and ought only to be the slave of the passions and can never pretend to any other office than to serve and obey them, end of quote. So the overall moral of Hume's attack on rationalism is concordant with some new and interesting findings from cognitive neuroscience and goes toward this direction. Reason alone cannot accomplish the great role it has been given since Plato. Reason is a tool used by the mind to obtain and process information about events in the world or about relations among objects. True, reason can let us infer things connecting our actions to particular ends that can be morally evaluated. But unless we have certain sentiments that the ends are morally permissible or morally prohibited, based on some moral values and ideals, reason by itself cannot give us any piece of moral advice about our actions. So Hume argued that a person in full possession of reason yet lacking moral sentiment would have difficulty in choosing any ends or goal to pursue and would look like what we now call a psychopath. Well, Hume's emotivist approach to ethics did not have a favorable reception. To begin with, Kant's rationalist ethical theory was created as an attempt to refute Hume. And in the 20th century, Kant's ethics has been much more influential than Hume's. Outstanding moral philosophers in the 20th century, such as Hare and Rawls, have followed Kant in their attempt to deduce a foundation for ethics from rationality itself. After this necessary historical detour, let me end by giving in a more systematic way this human picture that emerges when we draw the connections between moral judgments, moral reasoning, and moral intuitions. Moral judgments are, roughly, from a rather empirical and behavioristic point of view, evaluations, good versus bad, of an individual's actions or character that are made relative to a set of virtues considered to be obligatory by culture. Moral reasoning is a complex set of inferences, mostly inductive and or by analogy, which are obtained through a conscious mental activity that consists of transforming given information about people in order to reach moral judgment. A key factor about moral reasoning is that the conclusion is obtained through a kind of inference made in several steps. The reasoner seeks the relevant evidence, weighs evidence, coordinates evidence with theories, and reaches a decision. So moral reasoning is a conscious process which is carried over in an intentional way, effortful and controllable. Then moral intuition. Roughly, an intuition is a judgment, a solution to a puzzle or other conclusion that pops up suddenly and effortlessly, without any awareness by the person of the mental process that led to that specific outcome. A researcher in the field, Brunner, says that an intuition involves, and I quote, maneuvers based seemingly on an implicit perception of the total problem. The thinker arrives at an answer, which may be right or wrong, with little is, if any, awareness of the process by which he or she reached it, end of quote. The contrast of intuition and reasoning is not the contrast of emotion and cognition. Intuition, reasoning, and the assessment contained in emotions are all forms of cognition. The terms intuition and reasoning are meant to capture the contrast made by philosophers and psychologists between two kinds of cognition. The distinction here is in terms of time. Intuitions occur quickly, effortlessly, and automatically. The outcome, but not the process, is accessible to consciousness. Reasoning, on the other hand, occurs slowly, requires effort, and takes at least some steps that are accessible to consciousness. Now, more specifically, moral intuition can be defined roughly as sudden appearance in consciousness of a moral judgment, including an effective moral assessment, good, bad, like, dislike, without any conscious awareness of having gone through steps of searching, weighing evidence, or inferring a conclusion. Just to wrap up and to finish, let me stress the elements that can be combined in this sort of intuitionistic human model of moral intuition and moral judgments. First, moral judgments appear in consciousness as the result of moral intuitions. And there are some new findings in the field of social cognition which seem to back to support this view that social cognition operates automatically and implicitly. Then, moral reasoning as an effortful process engaged in after a moral judgment is made, in which a person searches for arguments that will support an already made judgment. The third element, moral reasoning, is produced and sent forth verbally to justify one's already made moral judgment to others. Such reasoning can sometimes affect other people, although moral discussions and arguments are notorious for the rarity with which persuasion takes place. The fourth element, the mere fact that friends, the groups in which we belong, allies and acquaintances have made a moral judgment, exerts a sort of direct influence on others, even if no reasoned persuasion is used. These four elements could be taken as the core of this human sort of human view about intuition, moral intuition, and judgments. But to these four elements, we may add two other elements on which the rationalists have stressed very heavily, because it is my understanding that this intuitionistic model does not preclude including some rationalist elements into it. But nevertheless, the rationalist elements that I am going to mention immediately are not an essential part of this intuitionistic model. So we have this reasoned judgment link, which has it that people may at times reason their way to a judgment by sheer force of logic. In such cases, reasoning is causal, but this is, according to my understanding, very rare cases. And the last element, people may activate new intuitions that contradict the initial intuitive judgment. So, the final word about my presentation, in contrast to the rationalist model, which is very heavy and I guess still used in many discussions in ethics, in theoretic ethics, I wanted to stress the fact that when we pass moral judgments, we start more often from our intuitions, and then we come up with an argument in order to back our intuitions. And I find that this sort of human model is better off when we want to make justice to how we pass moral judgments and how we reason in ethics. That is all. Thank you.